We're back. Glad to have you along. Hope you had a good day today. And Friday coming up tomorrow, another weekend already. Webster Griffin Tarpley is back with us tonight. Webster has distinguished himself worldwide for his efforts to expose the 9/11 lies. He's been on the program talking about it several times. His most recent article at Rents.com, Iran War Clouds on the Harvest Moon, drew a lot of reaction here. And he's back with us tonight to talk about that and much more. Hello, Webster. Welcome back.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Good, good, good. And rolling right along.
Good.
And this, I'll tell you, this whole scene, if someone were to try to script it, no way. You couldn't do it. No Hollywood screenwriter could sit back and write the last 4 years as a screenplay. It's too absurd. It's too crazy. I don't think. Maybe a science fiction writer could, but that would be a stretch.
Well, I think I would focus it for dramaturgical reasons on the last couple of months.
Oh, yeah, sure. Now we got Rita coming on, too. Let's hey, look at Brown, FEMA. It's endless. The corruption is so thick and so heavy and so complete that everywhere you turn, There is enough laying around now to literally impeach probably dozens of presidents, but it's not happening.
Well, I think we need to focus above and beyond the disasters and the insufficient response to the disasters. I think we have to focus on two things: the new 9/11, the danger of a new 9/11, deliberately created by people inside the U.S. Military and security bureaucracy, and secondly, the question of a war with Iran, although not only with Iran. And this is essentially what I have tried to pay attention to in the course of the summer. And I guess it went back to at the end of July, this famous article in the American Conservative magazine, a kind of obscure magazine, but written by Philip Giraldi, who is the partner of Vince Canestraro, who I think is better known as a former CIA agent. And the analysis was that Cheney and company, the Cheney faction, or Cheney and his masters, or however you want to describe it, had tasked the Pentagon to be ready for preemptive nuclear attack on Iran using these smaller nuclear weapons, newer, smaller nuclear weapons, special anti-bunker nuclear weapons, and that this attack...
Kinder and gentler nuclear weapons.
Well, I suppose that's one way to put it. The danger, of course, is that they're easier to use.
You cross the
nuclear threshold
with
less effort, so you get yourself in trouble faster. But that this attack would come in the wake of a new 9/11, and of course, if we know Cheney and the mentality of this group, the neocons, it's clear that they don't wait around hoping that divine providence will send them a new 9/11. If there's going to be a new 9/11, they have to go out and concoct it themselves and synthesize it. So we've had this situation going on now, and I think this has been the talk of the international strategic community, people in the governments around the world, in the chanceries of Europe, intelligence agencies all over the world, are talking precisely about the danger of these two things, the new 9/11 and Iran. And, of course, in the United States, the mass media don't talk about this. I just would give you a sample just of the last couple of days.
Uh-huh.
Over the last weekend, Zalmay Khalilzad, who is the neocon proconsul now in Iraq after having been in the same position in Afghanistan. I think he's a former UNOCAL employee. Anyway, he's a doctrinaire, Chicago boy neocon. He went to this gathering of oligarchs at Jackson Hole, Wyoming, sponsored by Teddy Forstman. And this was attended by a whole parade of degenerates and parasites that I won't go through naming.
Now, wait a minute. Martha Stewart was there. Come
yes.
on, Martha. Jeez.
And many, many others. Robert Novak was there. He didn't like it. He wrote a column about it today saying that he didn't like it because it was an anti-Bush meeting. But he doesn't describe the main thing that was said, which was Khalilzad's firm prediction that the United States is going to invade Syria. So one thing is the U.S. is going to invade Syria. We have a dispatch in the last day or two from the North Korean news agency saying that the U.S. is looking for a pretext to attack North Korea.
Ah, good luck.
Why
don't they just attack the whole damn world and be done with it? Right?
Well, I think we have to sort of sift through some of this stuff. We have President Chavez of Venezuela, who claims that there's a plan to attack him. And I think all of these are quite realistic.
Could be. By the way, let me just drop this in. That guy is standing taller and taller among hundreds of millions of people around the world. He just sent a second 1 million barrels of gasoline free to help the victims of Katrina and the American public today. I mean, the guy is playing politics perfectly.
I think he's a very interesting figure, and we could talk about that he has played a leading role in trying to devise alternatives to the hegemony of the U.S. dollar. In other words, he's the leader in barter deals, in bartering oil for medical care for his own people, setting up all kinds of deals that essentially cut out the U.S. dollar and therefore cut out the U.S. Federal Reserve and Wall Street and the spot market there. Finally, there's the question of Iran. So just in a period of a couple of days, we have rumors of war involving Syria, North Korea, Venezuela, Iran, and possibly other countries. I think we also have to be aware that we're in a pre-war climate. I'll try to explain in various ways what I mean by this. But
it's interesting to think about what you just said, though. That's war on three continents.
It would be if it came about.
I think
some of this is disinformation.
Well, of course, but that's how widely this panorama of disinfo and fear-mongering is being painted. It's an amazing thing to watch.
It essentially makes you feel like you're in 1938 or 1939 when, at a point, I guess the only comparison is really with Nazi Germany, when they had begun to attack, they'd gone into the Rhineland, they had absorbed Austria, and then the question was, what would they do next? Would it be Czechoslovakia? Would it be Poland? Would it be someplace else? But you're in a very, very dangerous geometry where this stuff is being constantly discussed behind the scenes. And I think a lot of the things that go on in the media from day to day are not understandable unless you look at it through the lens of the fact that you're getting very, very close to a wider war in the Middle East, or indeed a new war in the Middle East. Just maybe a couple of examples. The British had been saying for quite a number of months now that they were going to take most of their forces out of Iraq, mm-hmm. and that they were going to move them to Afghanistan. And they justified this with money reasons and other reasons. And just a couple of days ago, the Sunday Telegraph, this past Sunday, which is the NATO intelligence, British Defense Ministry organ, insider leak sheet, comes out with a story saying the British are not going to take their forces out of Iraq, and instead they're going to send in their 7th Armored Brigade, their famous Desert Rats, which is probably one of the best units that they have. So they've essentially done a 180-degree policy shift,
uh-huh.
and they've done it in such a way as to suggest that they are indeed getting ready when that 7th Armored Brigade arrives in Iraq in the course of October, and probably more like early October than later, they're going to be ready to take part in this raid or whatever it is that is planned vis-a-vis Iran.
Incursion? I don't know. How many units, how many pieces of equipment does that brigade have, do we know?
Well, it's a brigade. I mean, it's not even a division. The war plan would seem to look something like this, and this is, I think it's confirmed by some things that Anthony Wedgwood Benn has written about lately. The idea this time is it's impossible to occupy the entire country of Iran. It's impossible to do a large-scale conventional assault because the forces are simply not there. There was a report that Rumsfeld went to a series of commands and asked them what could they do. He went to Central Command and said, what can you do for me, Central Command? And they said, well, we can't do anything because we're tied up in Iraq. He went to the Special Forces Command and said, what can you do? And they said, well, we can do some raiding, but it won't really be satisfactory.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went to the Strategic Air Command and asked them, what can you do? And they said, well, we can undertake the atomic bombing of Iran. And it turns out that I think the likely scenario is either conventional bombing, which will tend to be very unsatisfactory, or nuclear bombing, which may also be unsatisfactory, combined with the attempt to seize key zones, that is, places where nuclear reactors are located, nuclear enrichment facilities, nuclear bunkers, research reactors, university faculties, to seize those and hold them for a week or two to give some teams the chance to go into the underground bunker system and destroy everything that's there.
Well, the other talk, of course, is that they would whack off a piece of Iran, i.e. the southwestern area where the oil is.
Correct. That would be Arabistan or the new state of Ahvaz,
yep,
which is already part of the Bernard Lewis plan 30 years ago.
There you go. Amazing analysis. Webster Griffin Tarpley, my guest. We'll be right back with more. Hi, talking to Webster Tarpley about the Middle East. We have been focused on Katrina, of course. Rita is now knocking at the door with a lot of potential damage. And a lot of misdirection through natural disaster, of course. Some would suggest otherwise, but people aren't looking over there now as they were. And I'm not sure how many Americans can really look over there anymore, Webster, with anything much less than a... We're polarized here in this country. We either see it as the farce and lie and sham and murderous adventure it is, or I keep seeing these support our troops things on cars, and people want to argue. I guess that's the design, though, is to split the country, which they did in the last two electoral thefts we've been witness to, and now certainly with this alleged foreign policy. We have an America that is split pretty much down the middle.
And I think the danger is that the kind of enterprise that is now in the works with a new 9/11 and an attack on Iran, that does not depend on a broad public consensus, because it intends to manufacture a new 9/11 style hysteria. Now we can speculate about how successful it might be, but just maybe some account of the timing. The general idea, in line with that sort of war plan that I mentioned before, you're talking about an operation that requires bombing, conventional bombing, perhaps nuclear bombing, and it seems to require something like 20 or 30,000 troops. Now, originally, back
That's
in...
That's it? They think they can surgically do something meaningful with that few?
Seems to be the idea, because that's what they've announced. And a lot of this stuff is hard to conceal, although they're doing their best to conceal it. Back in August, we were getting stories that the Pentagon was looking ahead to the troop levels for the period from October 15th through December 15th. And this is, they called this the plus up. The October 15th is, of course, the referendum on this Constitution that they've put together, whatever this document
please
can be described as, a bad joke. But there's going to be a referendum of some kind on August 15th. And then on December 15th in Iraq still, there's going to be a national parliamentary or political election. So the Pentagon had said, we need to have 20 to 30,000 more people in Iraq during that period from October through December, in order to defend the election. Now, of course, this is very suspicious, because that's exactly the kind of operation they seem to be talking about. That would be the 20 to 30,000. And then we began to get funny stories saying, oh, the 82nd Airborne Division and the 101st Airborne Division are being sent, at least units of them, are being sent to Iraq in order to be prison guards, in order to be chauffeurs for vans.
Who's releasing this kind of crap?
Well, this was all over the place. There were actually even units identified. And, of course, this is very suspicious because...
Well, yeah, to say the least, let me suggest... I saw mention of that once or twice, but I did see a number of stories on the Internet claiming that all leaves had been canceled, and you've seen them too.
Exactly, and those
are
true.
They never check out, though.
Well, I think there's a lot to it. The thing that I found most suspicious is if you have paratroopers, those are elite shock troops, and they can be
guards.
Only...
No way.
You can only use them for one thing, and that's
right.
An attack.
Of course.
Paratroopers used any other way are wasted, and of course the neocons have managed to waste them, but they've never quite gotten down to the level of saying the 82nd Airborne Division ought to become a bunch of prison guards.
Wouldn't it be smarter for them to say they're going over there for some battle experience to shore up this or that? I mean, why come up with such a harebrained excuse? That's
well, I guess some of these neocons can they show their acumen to the fact that they did not become novelists because
you got it.
As novelists they wouldn't have succeeded
no
too well. Anyway, as soon as you hear that paratroopers and especially tank divisions, any kind of high-powered attack troops are being
right.
sent, then you have to figure that the attack is on.
Is that mobilization or that deployment underway now, or is it still on the talking stage?
It is.
You know?
It seems to be underway. Now, there's a cloud around this, too, because at the end of August and the beginning of September, General Vines, speaking in Baghdad, said, well, there's not going to be a plus-up because of the hurricane, because the 82nd Airborne Division, or at least parts of it, were showing up documented on the streets of New Orleans. However, in the first week of September, as I try to show in this Harvest Moon article, Rumsfeld and Myers came out in their press conference in the Pentagon and said, this is all wrong. We have enough forces to do everything. We have our forces in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast, and we're going to continue with our plus-up for Iraq, meaning for Iran. So at that point, their official position is that the extra 20 or 30,000 are going to go there. And I would urge people, if anybody's listening in New Orleans, tell us when those berets of the 82nd Airborne Division disappear from the streets of New Orleans, because when they do, that may indicate that they're on their way someplace else.
It's going to be pretty hard to keep all the families off the Internet when there is a deployment of that size, I would think. Well, we should find out. We should get indication from somebody.
It should be possible to know something like this. So that then becomes the big danger period, October 15th through December 15th. Now, there are other danger periods. If you go to some dubious websites like World Net Daily, there we have Joseph Farah telling us that the next terror attack is going to be a Ramadan attack. And this year, Ramadan is between, I believe, October 4th and approximately a month later. So that helps to define a possible window from the point of view of these scenarios that are being spun.
All right. Okay. Very good. You can see Webster's article up in the featured section. Our featured stories at Rents.com. Iran war clouds on the Harvest Moon. Well, if Webster is right, to any degree at all, looks like another Merry Christmas season coming for all of us. And when I mentioned the Support Our Troops stickers on the cars, we here at Rents.com and all of our guests support our troops as well. We want them home where they belong. Back in a minute. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Webster Tarpley about the immediate future between now and the end of the year, which promises, unfortunately, to be replete with all kinds of unpleasant news, to put it mildly, nukes in Iran, an incursion, holding part of Iran, maybe for a couple of weeks, maybe trying to chop off the Iranian oil belt, so to speak. So many cards in the deck, so many hands being held, and people passing cards back and forth, right and left. 82nd Airborne, over there to be prison guards. I don't think so. Good point, Webster. Go ahead.
Well, the other thing is, in terms of the timing, we've now had the German election, and this has a bit of a story all its own. German election was September 18th, this past Sunday. Now, I think from the point of view of the neocons, it was worth waiting to see if they could win that one. The fact is that they have not won it, and that's a very important question, because if they could get Europe to line up behind them, or even get Europe to actually take the lead in attacking Iran, then they would have a kind of neocon dream scenario. But this is not to be. Remember back on August 13th, Bush made this fateful statement about Iran, that all options are on the table.
Oh, yeah, we've heard that before. Yeah.
Well, the very next day, Gerhard Schröder, the Chancellor of Germany, was starting his election campaign, and he is a very clever politician, and I think he sees opportunities, but he does them in ways that are much more compatible with the survival of the world than the way that Bush does it.
Nicely put.
And when he started his campaign in Hanover, in northern Germany, the following day, Schröder said, "Take your military options off the table. We've seen that they're worthless. The United States is perhaps strong enough to win a war, seemingly, but too weak to win a peace." He talked about dangerous escalation, and basically said that Germany would not be a part of any attack on Iran.
Those are great statesmanlike words, which did not get, shall we say, much play over here.
No, that was not the headline story of the New York Times. The New York Times simply said, well, ha-ha, he's just another election demagogue trying to win a desperate race. The question is, therefore, with Schröder, you had a pretty good certainty, and the German people knew this too, that Germany would not be a part of the attack on Iran. But with this Angelika Merkel and her group, these are essentially neocons of a very weak and diluted variety. They would never be able to say no. It was clear that if Merkel got into the chancellorship, then the life and death, war and peace decisions for Germany would be made in Washington and London, and they didn't want this, so they voted against her. And as far as I can see, it is very likely that Schröder is going to hold on to power because of the way that Merkel, campaigning as she did, lost approximately 7 to 8% of the total vote. She lost it in the course of the campaign, whereas Schröder gained 5 or 6%. So I think it's likely that there's going to be a government led by Schröder. Nobody knows exactly what kind. But that this is also passed now. Whatever this is, the German electoral die is cast, and there's no reason to wait in the hopes that you might be able to get a friendly, in other words, warmonger government in Berlin to perhaps lead Europe into some, you know, more enthusiastic support of whatever Bush and Cheney are going to do. So there's another reason. Now, the other timing question, and I want to mention this before we go too much further, we have to look at the dark of the moon, strange as it sounds, the new moon, because the new moon is the time of the calendar which is most congenial for these kinds of sneak attack operations, which is what they are. And the critical dates, therefore, are October 3rd, November 2nd, and December 5th. Those are the remaining new moons or no moons of the of this calendar year.
One more time.
October 3rd, mm-hmm. November 2nd, December 1st. Mm-hmm. Those would be the times of the year, of the month, that would be most adapted for nighttime air operations over a country like Iran. In other words, if there's going to be a sneak attack involving bombing with aircraft mm-hmm. and even cruise missiles, those are the times when it would be best to undertake it. Now, you can do it at other times. You can also say, of course, that as you go further towards the end of the year, things get darker and darker. Those nights become longer. That's perhaps something else to think about, but that is maybe not the most decisive thing.
Right. What about Iran's response to any of this? Now, I don't care how many strategical strikes they make. strategic strikes they made. They're not going to be able to take out all of Iran's military prowess. That's a very competent machine over there. They will be able to launch some retaliatory strikes with some very advanced weapon systems. We know that.
Yes, I mean, we could speculate about that too. There are, for example, the reports that the Iranians have gotten their hands on those famous Soviet or Russian cruise missiles, the ones that are designed to destroy supertankers and or aircraft carriers, that they would be able to close the Straits of Hormuz, that they would also order their forces into action in Iraq. I think it's clear that this is an absolute leap in the dark. It's a plan of incalculable folly. It is a meat grinder 3, 4, 5 times worse than Iraq has turned out to be.
Agreed.
Just in terms of the timing, maybe one or two other things. There was an interesting op-ed in the Washington Post a couple of days ago, written by Jim Hoagland, who usually writes about foreign affairs, and he says that when Donald Rumsfeld talks to his staff, he always asks them about 10-12, and he keeps asking them, what are you going to do on 10-12? And Hoagland hastens to say, he's not talking about the precise date of a new terror attack on the U.S. or NATO country or, you know, another allied country, but he's simply trying to say that the new 9-11, a re-edition, a repeat replication of 9-11, is inevitable. It's only a question of when it's going to happen, and he's trying to urge them to think about this as something that they're going to have to deal with. On the other hand, thinking of Rumsfeld, maybe from our point of view, this 10-12, that could be as realistic as anything else, because when you look at these new moons, you have to work backward from them. In other words, you can't have your new 9-11 on October 2nd and then expect to have everything ready in terms of UN resolutions and so forth by October 3rd. You might need a week, you might need 2 weeks, you might need more. This is very, very difficult to say.
There are suggestions, of course, made by some, you've seen them, that the Iranians would use their Sunburn anti-ship cruise missiles to take out a couple of American warships, which would incense the American public, of course. I mean, obviously, these are all manipulative things. In other words, there may be a ship or two that would be deemed expendable to prop up some of the home support for such a meat grinder, as you say. And I that's a perfect term.
I think the oldest aircraft carriers are the ones that go into the Persian Gulf, always.
Well. Okay. Back in just a couple of minutes with Webster Tarpley. About his article, Iran War Clouds on the Harvest Moon. This is wide open. What if we go in there and nuke this and that and it doesn't work and the Iranians have a big surprise up their sleeves? I guess intelligence is pretty confident, but again, we have this failure on the human level of our intel, which has been demonstrated a number of times in recent years. So it's a very dicey situation, and your point about the oldest aircraft carrier draws the Persian Gulf is dryly humorous, but quite right. I mean, one Sunburn missile could take one out. That's all it would take, and if they fire off 15 or 20, I wouldn't want to be on those ships trying to stop them. Thank you.
This is like doing an experiment on your own flesh. This is the last thing you want to do.
That's right.
This is absolute folly. These are incalculable risks. The disasters that the neocons are courting are naturally out of all proportion to any possible gain. If you look at the pattern of threats, we've got Khalilzad threatening Syria in public. We've got the State Department threatening Syria. We've got Khalilzad going to this confab of oligarchs at Jackson Hole and talking about Syria there, you look at Syria and you say, well, is that disinformation? It sounds a little bit like Hitler saying to Stalin, I'm going to attack in 1942.
Yes.
It's slightly off. It's pretty much on the agenda, but it's not the main thing. On the other hand, when you look at what the neocon argument is, it's an insane flight forward argument saying we're losing in Iraq because of the infiltration of foreign fighters from Iran and from Syria. The other side of it, which I think is important to keep in mind, which has also not been reported, and this is mainly the Russian response, in those same days, right after Bush said all options were on the table in his interview with Israeli television on August 13th, not only did Schroeder say, take your military options back off the table because they're worthless, but Putin also commented, this was in the middle of war games in the Russian Far East, saying, I think that lowering the threshold for the use of nuclear weapons is a dangerous trend because somebody may feel tempted to use nuclear weapons. If that happens, the next step can be taken. More powerful nuclear arms can be used, which may lead to nuclear conflict. This extremely dangerous trend is in the back of the mind of some politicians and military officials. Now, that sounds like he answered Bush's threat with a threat of his own, and his threat is quite formidable. When Putin made these remarks, he had just been flying around in a Tupolev 160 with the commander of the Russian Strategic Air Force. They had just tested what Putin described as a new high-precision long-range cruise missile. This is something beyond the Sunburn, beyond the Yakhonsk, and something completely off the chart in terms of what the U.S. has. He also tested the RSM-54 ICBM, which is known in NATO parlance as the SSN-23 SCIF missile. This was fired from the Russian nuclear submarine Yekaterinburg in the Barents Sea. This is all in the middle of August, and this was only one of the Russian maneuvers going on at that time. There was also the Peace Mission 05 with China, and there were also other maneuvers going on in the Central Asian area, the Caspian Sea, and so forth. So that was a very, very impressive display of Russian military preparedness
and
over
again,
six to eight time zones.
Exactly right, and again, hardly mentioned over here at all.
Hardly mentioned. So this is the kind of geometry that you begin to get into when you start dabbling with Iran.
Webster, what is your read on Putin? He also said that Iranian nuclear weapons were not acceptable. He didn't want to see that happen. And yet the Russians, of course, have signed to build 5 or 6 more reactors. They know what's going on over there. It's this rhetoric. He's a very shrewd guy. How alive is the Russian bear? And might there be a moment in time, a moment in history, when all of a sudden there's a huge wake-up call, and that wake-up call is a note from Putin, stop, or we're coming in on the other side?
I think this is exactly what we have to think of. You see, the U.S. theory, which you hear from neocons and just general commentators, they would say, well, since 1991, there's only been one superpower, and that's clearly the U.S. And, of course, you can attack this in many ways. You can say, what, a superpower with a hollow army of 10 divisions that wants to conquer the world with
right.
10 divisions and no logistics? It's just absurd. The Russian theory is that Russia remains a superpower with an extremely formidable nuclear force, and therefore that the superpower rivalry never ended, but continues.
That's correct. What we don't remember, and I've mentioned it for years, I'm sure you have too, is that the Russians have never stopped putting every dollar they can get, and many of those dollars, of course, are finagled through the West via loans and so forth, into the most advanced R&D programs perhaps on the planet. They have pushed their technology. They say they are at least a generation ahead of most American high-tech weapon systems now, if not more. And there are a lot of people who believe that.
Certainly. I think you have to take that very, very seriously. I think Putin's approach is to say, I can no longer maintain, and I don't need to maintain, these crazy World War II tank armies in Eastern Europe, and of course they don't even have the real estate to do that. But he says,
exactly
in effect,
right. Yeah.
I can remain the world leader in 6 to 8 critical areas that would be decisive in case it ever came to hostilities, and which in the meantime become the basis of deterrence as long as you're dealing with somebody who's rational.
Correct.
But then when you look at these neocons and their fascist madman foaming at the mouth, mad dog doctrine and behavior,
mm-hmm.
then you'd have to say these people are not capable of a rational calculation. They seem, it's enough to want to attack Iran to be certifiable. But if you want to attack Iran and Syria at the same time, which may be their intent, then we have people who are certifiable on site. That is, they have to be taken away with a net and not be running the United States. The other thing I would say about Putin is, say what you will, his behavior is defensive. It is not attempting to threaten anybody, as far as I can see, except as retaliation.
Of course. Look how the man is being how Russia is being encroached upon. Look what we're doing in Georgia. I mean, the guy is not blind. He doesn't want to see, he'd rather see an independent Iran than an Iran under the umbrella of the neocon lunatics. I mean, it's not even under discussion.
He also had, I think Putin had to do some very fast thinking on the day of September 11th. And when Bush called him and said, here, we're going to attack Afghanistan and we demand bases in former Soviet Central Asia, Putin knew that if he said no to that, he would essentially join the list of the axis of evil very, very quickly. And he would push himself to the top of the list very, very quickly. So essentially what Putin has done since 9/11 has been to go into a kind of strategic deception. The old KGB term for it is maskirovka, strategic deception. So he's essentially saying, since the neocons have these obsessions, since they're obsessed with the Middle East and Israel, they're likely to attack other countries. They're going to attack Afghanistan, but then Iraq, and then perhaps Iran and Syria. And all that time, the U.S. is getting weaker, militarily weaker, financially weaker, politically weaker, and Russia is actually getting stronger. They're more solvent. They're getting a lot of oil income, and they're pushing ahead with these military research programs that you've said. The other thing I think is important is that Putin has bet a lot on the survival of Schröder. In the week before the German election, Putin came to visit Schröder, and they agreed on one of the biggest natural gas pipelines the world has ever seen, which is going to go along the floor of the Baltic Sea. And at that point, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, and Poland, and I'm afraid all those countries qualify as U.S. puppet states at this point. They're Trojan horses inside the European community. They've essentially rubber stamped anything that Bush and Rice and the rest of them, Colin Powell, sent along. They began squawking, saying, yes, but that doesn't give us any leverage. In other words, we can't threaten to turn off the gas. And that's exactly the point, that Putin and Schröder don't want those little hands inspired by the U.S. on the gas tap. So that was a big factor also in the support that Schröder got in the German election, was that people could see that Putin was clearly on his side.
Putin is also making a very firm stand, as are Russian nationalists, against Zionism, neocons, that whole mentality. But they watched what happened, how Zionism literally ate Ukraine in about 2 days. They know the potential of these Western puppets.
Well, of course, now I think we can laugh at this color revolution and this CIA people power coup.
Embarrassing.
Of December of 04 in Kiev, with that big bazaar that they put on in the streets of Kiev. Because all of these people, of course, are thieves, and a lot of them are out at this point. So that government may not be very long-lasting, and that, I think, is a point where you can see Putin's flexibility, that rather than give in and have a big thermonuclear confrontation over Ukraine, I think he's given them enough rope to hang themselves, and that may be their fate sooner rather than later.
Very interesting. And Putin is a man, and I sit, as do you and many of you listening, on the screen watching the real news in the real world. He's quiet. He's generally quiet. Now, he's not being covered here, but when he speaks, it is covered in Europe, and it is covered, of course, at home. over there. But we don't see it over here. But generally speaking, he's not a bombastic man. He's when he speaks, I think, important words, and people should pay much more attention.
And ever since this all options are on the table from Bush on 13th of August, the whole Russian government, Foreign Minister Ivanov repeatedly, don't lower the nuclear threshold. That increases the danger of nuclear war.
Well, makes sense for them. Okay, back in a couple of minutes, hour number two, our second hour tonight with Webster Griffin Tarpley. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back. I'm Jeff Rentz. The website is Rentz.com. That's R-E-N-S-E.com. Named by the U.S. Department of State as the world's number one disseminator of misinformation and conspiracy theory.
Congratulations on that one.
Thank you, Webster. I'm
That's
waiting
really
for
something
my...
to be proud of.
Well, thank you. Well, we do, and you're a part of it, and I want to also welcome Webster Griffin Tarpley as our newest columnist at Rentz.com. Several of his articles are up there now. You'll find him on the left side of our homepage. Congratulations yourself, sir. Thank you very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. It's an honor to be part of anything that the State Department considers that threatening.
It's true. I'm still waiting for my handwritten letter of, well, my card. It's a card from Condi. Not going to write me a letter, just a card, perhaps. Well, anything.
A bill of attainder, perhaps.
Oh, please. Those people are just amazing, aren't they? You like to think that, well, maybe somebody on the inside kind of helped concoct this, knowing full well that it would double my site hits, which it just about has, which were huge to begin with. So, whatever. whatever. All right, we're talking about a lot of very important issues, and a question comes up from time to time. With Katrina and with this Rita and so forth, do we really need another 9/11 at home for them to try to pull this off, Webster?
Yes, I think you definitely do, in the sense that you're going to be crossing the nuclear threshold in all probability. So in order to stand before the world, remember, the world has other problems. The world has problems of its own. It can't be focused on every disaster inside the United States under the Bush regime, because there are simply too many. Out there in the world, 40,000 people die every day of malnutrition and easily treatable diseases, so they have other worries.
What is it, several million a year of malaria? God only knows how many millions a year from HIV/AIDS now. That's not even talked about anymore. It goes on and on.
It's a very, very long list, and it's all absolutely needless. Right? It'd simply be a matter of a few hundred million dollars across the world, well spent, and of course a comprehensive debt moratorium for everybody, and some modest program of aid, but mainly a debt moratorium, and they could get back on their feet. From the point of view of the current regime, the Bush, Cheney, neocon cabal, whatever it is, they need something very, very dramatic, and it's like heroin. It's harder and harder to get. Once they started on the path of terrorism in 9/11. They become heroin addicts, and they need repeated shots, and of course they need the dose to be increased. I would just point to a couple of things in this regard. In terms of state-sponsored terrorism, these people, the State Department that sets itself up as a judge of others.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at their allies, the British in Basra. That incident at the jail in Basra, I think, ought to show anybody with eyes who is the terrorist state and who is running state-sponsored terrorism. Those two British troopers who were dressed up as Arabs in pathetic disguises, but dressed up nevertheless, those were agents provocateurs. Those were state-sponsored terrorists. They probably learned how to do that in Northern Ireland, and if they didn't do it, their officers did. Those guys were going around killing people and planting explosives.
Sure.
And that is why they were arrested. And they were part of Special Air Services. Special Air Services is the British equivalent of Fort Bragg and the U.S. Special Forces Command, and they do the same kinds of nasty things. They're even part of this special unit called Special Reconnaissance Regiment with this strange seal, which you've seen, of a
yeah.
sword and a helmet, and it looks like something out of one of these crazy Lord of the Rings movies, where one of these Forces of Darkness guys gets killed by a woman in one of these Armageddon battles. Anyway, those people, those two, were carrying out terrorist activity, and I think it's clear there's an Iraqi communist who's going around in Spain in the last couple of days. You can find this on the internet. The Iraqi communist is in Spain, and he says most of the horrendous atrocities that you've seen, cutting people's heads off and large-scale massacres of Shiites and others that have ascribed to Zarqawi, are simply the work of U.S., British, and Israeli
right.
intelligence agencies.
Right. Zarqawi is probably dead, by the way.
To the extent that he exists, he's a wholly owned asset of the CIA.
Yeah.
This is the kind of thing that General Frank Kitson writes about in his book called Low Intensity Operations.
Hmm.
That's one of his books. There's another book by Frank Kitson called Gangs and Counter Gangs, and he tells you essentially what he did in Kenya to destroy the nationalist movement, the Mau Mau. He created his own Mau Mau, which carried out horrendous atrocities, and that became the world image of the Mau Mau. That's what most people think of when they think of this. But this is essentially what Kitson did. So the Kitson agent provocateur, state-sponsored terrorism, Northern Ireland approach is very, very much alive there. Now, the other one I would like to point to is Able Danger. One of the things about Able Danger that strikes me, and this we're getting now a little, taking a step maybe back towards 9/11, and I have written about this in my book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA, which is a book that people can still get at Amazon. I wrote about the notion of synthetic terror, that it's created out of government bureaucracies. Now, if you look at Able Danger, we're told that these people were not only carrying out surveillance of Atta and a long list of other terrorists, but that they were, according to the Washington Post, also carrying out manipulation. In other words, when you look through the haze of that verbiage, Able Danger was a group that included in its capabilities the fact that they were terrorist controllers. In other words, if, as I believe, Atta is a double agent, was a double agent, then who were his case officers? Able Danger are the leading candidates right now to have been the case officers and controllers, terrorist controllers, of the double agent Mohammed Atta. We're told that somebody in the Pentagon, in some recent moment, destroyed 2.5 terabytes of information, 1/4 of the entire contents of the Library of Congress, in terms of information on Mohammed Atta that was destroyed. Now, if you have 2.5 terabytes on Mohammed Atta, you've got life, death, and miracles of Atta. You've got every pimple on his,
That's right.
on his posteriors. This is not just a study. This is something that has to do with direction. It has to do with using him, directing him, and directing these other people. And that is why I think the Pentagon refused to come to the hearings yesterday. They have illegally destroyed, think of it, they have destroyed 2.5 terabytes, 2.5 trillion bytes of information. It's like they went to the Library of Congress and took out 1/4 of the books and burned them. That's in effect what they've done.
Wow.
To cover up this fact. So I think the link from this special reconnaissance regiment in Basra to Abel Danger is a short fuse. Now, if we get back to Basra, the other question is, why were the British carrying out an increased program of provocations right now? Well, the answer, I think, came yesterday from Rumsfeld. Yesterday, in Rumsfeld's press briefing, he warned Iran about getting involved in southern Iraq. So his response to the British attack on a sovereign Iraqi jail, a high-handed outrage, is to warn Iran, don't get involved. It looks to me like one of the reasons that those British SAS or SRR operatives, whatever they were, why they were going into action these days was precisely because this is where you can create provocations, not only vis-a-vis the Shiites of southern Iraq, but also vis-a-vis Iran. And I think that's also very, very worrisome. Maybe I just mention one other sign that was picked up by the Israeli press, and I think this is very, very interesting. Back in on September 4th, there was a collision in the Gulf, in the Persian Gulf, I guess we can call it, or Arabian Gulf, whichever you like better. This was the USS Philadelphia colliding with a Turkish freighter. The Turkish freighter is, I guess the name is not important. It's not going to mean anything to anybody. But this was picked up by Amir Oren, who was one of the senior commentators of the Israeli press in Haaretz, which would be a leftist Israeli newspaper, on September 11th, saying that the most fateful thing he had seen recently was not from Gaza, not from New Orleans, but from the Persian Gulf, where the USS Philadelphia collided with a Turkish freighter just north of Bahrain. And he says that's exactly where you'd want to fire Tomahawk missiles for a sneak attack on Iran. And those, of course, could be conventional or they could be nuclear. And that also indicates a heightened level of deployment, which happened to get projected onto the front pages when this submarine, which was on the surface, collided with a freighter.
Good point. And one thinks back on all the horrible bombings in Iraq, and one wonders logically how many of them were carried out by U.S., British, Mossad, mercenaries. Probably an awful lot of them. How many murders? How many staged events to turn Iraqi against Iraqi and keep that poor decimated country into the barrel where it's been thrust? Lots of things going on. Be right back with Webster Tarpley in just a minute. Okay, I just, again, think back on all those bombings, and I've gotten, as have you, information from people who have suggested that false flags, all over the place, standard operating procedure now, many of these people wearing the headdresses and the masks and all that. Well, we saw the pictures out of Israel where some of the alleged Arab terrorists were quite clearly festooned with a Star of David medallion, a little tiny one hanging around one's neck, and anyway, there are mistakes made, but we always have to look behind and try to see who's really there. It's hard. It's harder than ever.
I wrote in my book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA, wrote it about a year ago now, that Zarqawi is clearly an asset of U.S. intelligence.
Oh, that's just the latest guy they pulled out of the box of clowns, right?
The way I came to it was the BBC had put out this documentary, The Power of Nightmares, suggesting that Al-Qaeda really did not exist. It was a figment of Western press agencies, propaganda, and governments. So with that, Bin Laden had sort of taken it on the nose. And within a couple of days, Zarqawi comes forward and says, I pledge eternal loyalty to the great leader Bin Laden. I now constitute myself as Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And you can see it's simply the Frank Kitchen mode. If you want to discredit the Iraqi national resistance, you come forward with a bunch of murderers who commit unspeakable atrocities and call themselves a branch of the Iraqi resistance, and then you've got a means to, for every neocon talk show host under the moon, to denigrate them. So I think that has I think that's becoming more and more obvious. And whatever this Iraqi communist is doing in Spain, I think he's got a very interesting thesis. Yeah. Maybe just a couple of other things on Iran.
Sure.
Remember that we're working with the Bernard Lewis plan, and I think this has also become obvious to a lot of people, that the so-called mistakes, starting with Bremer and ranging now all the way down,
right,
those are not mistakes. Those are designed to divide Iraq into Kurdistan, some kind of a Sunni entity, and a Shiistan in the south. That's the Bernard Lewis plan, which was available in certain forms almost 30 years ago now, back in the late 1970s. If you look at the original Bernard Lewis maps, and they're maps not drawn up by Bernard Lewis so much, this guy at the Institute for Advanced Study who advises Cheney, he's an agent of the British Arab Bureau in World War II. That's what he did, and he's been at the Institute for Advanced Study. So he's really the one who makes the policy, and he essentially says what has to happen is the thorough Balkanization of the entire Arab and Islamic world. And right now, since we're talking about Iran would go from being one country to six. We've already mentioned one of them. One of them is this Arabistan entity, otherwise known as Ahvaz, and you can find their website on the internet. That's the part along the northern.
They already have their own site.
Oh yes, absolutely. They've got lobbyists. They've got a whole operation.
I read about it. I didn't know they had a site. Would you spell that for our listeners so they can go check it out?
It's something like ACHWAZ. But you can find it if you just look it up under Arabistan. I think that will also get you there.
All right.
This has a long history. This was one of the reasons, one of the things that Saddam Hussein cited when he attacked Iran under U.S. prodding back in 1980 was that he wanted to liberate the Arabs of the northern littoral of the Gulf. And that's this thing called Ahvaz or Arabistan, which seems to have much of the oil. It seems to have the Karg Island tanker terminal, which would be one of the targets for one of these coming assaults. But so you'd have Arabistan would be one, Azerbaijan in the northwest, you'd have Kurdistan in the west, you'd have Baluchistan in the southeast, Pashtunistan, I guess, in the northeast, and then in the middle a kind of a rump state, which would be Iranistan. So you'd go from one rather powerful country, Iran, to six absolutely impotent petty states who could easily be controlled by whatever oil company had the franchise.
It's too much. I can't stand this anymore. It's too much.
Well, then there's Syria. Syria gets a little bit better treatment. According to the original Bernard Lewis map, they would get Kurdistan would be carved out of Syria, and also a special Alawite entity, the Alawites being the group that that the Assad family belongs to, and which is correspondingly resented. But
at least it wouldn't have a Stan tacked onto its backside. Like
no,
that was my little joke you missed. I said I can't stand this anymore. And it's getting to be silly time. You're right. The Balkanization of the whole region makes for easier hegemony by one of the superpowers in the area.
And it's of course this essentially means the destruction of human civilization in the area. On the other hand, there are people, clearly even inside the U.S. government, the National Intelligence Estimate of the CIA from about mid-August says that Iran does not have nuclear weapons and will not have them for several years. the International Institute for Strategic Studies report from London says the same thing. They don't have such bombs now, and they will not. So it doesn't make any sense.
Indeed. Okay, back in just a couple minutes as our conversation with Webster Tarpley continues. Hope to be right there with us. It's going to be a hot time between now and the end of the year. Those dates that Webster mentioned early seem to be the most propitious for anything of an adventure over there. October 3rd, November 2nd, December 1st, new moon, no moon, nights, darkest, better for surprise. Although the Iranians, again, are not completely incompetent. And one wonders, with their ties and contracts now with the Chinese to supply natural gas and petroleum and so forth, their ties to Russia, I just wonder if now's the time when, and we know that there's behind the scenes talking going on, if one or other of the superpowers, China or Russia, are going to say no. Just say no. I wonder.
Well, they've already said no in the sense that Putin has said this stuff. The U.S. Nuclear doctrine, which is nuclear sneak attack.
I mean say no with men and materiel.
Well, that's also possible. This is a whole complex of things that I just don't want to find out about. Because the only way to find this out for sure is to do one of those experiments on your own flesh again. And it's just, it's just not worth it. The thing I think that's important is perhaps to shift the emphasis a little bit. We've talked about the Iran side. How about the new 9/11 side?
Sure.
And here, maybe we can just sum up, what have we learned about state-sponsored terrorism? Well, I go back to the attempt by Hinckley. Hinckley wants to be freed these days. You might have seen it, right? John Hinckley Jr. wants to get out of this asylum where he's been kept.
Right.
Now he's 50 years old.
Right.
The day that he shot Reagan, on the following day, there was a presidential succession exercise under the Nine Lives series. On the day of for example, the London 7-7 events, the July 7th, we knew that there had been exercises, Atlantic Blue of the British, Top Off 3 of the U.S., Triple Play of Canada, which talked about bombs in the London subway.
This, we've talked about it here. It ought to be embarrassing.
And then there were, of course, the Visor Associates doing a real-time one with Peter Power.
Right there.
Talking about bombs in pretty much those stations at pretty much those same times.
Right.
I think what we have to learn from this is that state-sponsored terrorism, in order to be conduited through a military security bureaucracy where not everybody agrees, not everybody can be part of your operation, not everybody would support it. Some people would try to stop you. They'd try to sabotage you or try to assert the law, maybe is a better way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to give... If you have a criminal officer sitting next to a loyal officer,
mm-hmm.
and the loyal officer looks over and says, what are you doing there? That looks like planes crashing into buildings.
Mm-hmm.
The criminal officer has got to have a cover story, and he's got to say, well, that's the National Reconnaissance Office exercise on the morning of September 11th, 2001, that calls for crashing a plane into the NRO office, and that's a drill that we're doing, and it's legal, it's sanctioned, and by the way, you don't have a clearance and you can't know anything about it. Or the loyal officer looks over and he sees a cruise missile being shot into the side of the Pentagon,
mm-hmm.
and the criminal officer can say, well, that's Amalgam Virgo, and that's a rogue freighter in the Gulf of Mexico that fires a cruise missile that hits some important U.S. asset. In other words, the conduiting and the conduction of the terror attack through the state apparatus, this generally falls under the heading of MIHOP, made it happen on purpose. Maybe I can just say a couple of things about this. There are books about 9/11 that talk, and they talk correctly quite often, about Vigilant Guardian, Vigilant Warrior, Northern Vigilance, Northern Guardian. And they say, well, the essence of 9/11 is that the air defenses were taken down because all the fighters were transferred to Northern Canada and Alaska under those Vigilant Guardian, Vigilant Warrior, and Northern Guardian, and Northern Vigilant.
The exercises, right?
Those would be your LIHOP exercises. In other words, those would be the suppression of the normal air defense to let it happen on purpose. And this is all very germane and very important, and we have to hold on to what we've learned in that regard. But then there are the MIHOP exercises, and this is where we really have to insist. The National Reconnaissance Office was practicing a drill that assumed as a scenario crashing the plane into their headquarters. Amalgam Virgo had been a couple of months before, and that was shooting a cruise missile from the Gulf of Mexico from a rogue freighter. So what we have to say is that if there's going to be a new 9/11, the way that is very likely to happen, we can't be absolutely sure, but very likely is that it will take place under the aegis or in the context of or somehow under the cover of an exercise, a drill, a war game that closely resembles and closely mimics the terror operation that they want to carry out. And I'll just cite one. During the month of August, some friends of mine and I myself, we did a mobilization around something called Sudden Response 05. This was a drill on the coast of the Carolinas, and the hypothesis was a group of terrorists bring a 10-kiloton nuclear bomb to Charleston, South Carolina. They blow it up, and then the exercise is to see how you can respond to that. And as it unfolded, it turned out that it included Fort Bragg and the FBI, and that at Fort Bragg, they had two congressmen, two Democrats from North Carolina, who were willing to play the role of hostages in a hypothetical hostage-taking at Fort Bragg.
Mm-hmm.
A hue and cry developed about this, and the local newspaper in Charleston, South Carolina, had to write an article to calm people down because people were beginning to ask, is there going to be a nuclear detonation in Charleston, South Carolina? This was all, it was carried on a website called Total411.US, I think it is. Total 411. Anyway, if you just do total, meaning total information, total 411. So they did a mobilization on this. Then it turned out in New York during August, there was a gas dispersion drill. So four gas dispensers were set up in Manhattan and they began spewing out what was supposedly an inert gas that would have no effect on anybody, but was designed to show the patterns of wind distribution of gas in Manhattan. And there was a hue and cry about that on the local radio station, the Pacifica Network, and so forth. There was then in San Francisco another drill which was terror events in the harbor. And somehow the day after that there was an explosion that blew off a manhole cover and critically wounded a lady who was passing by. All of these things are very, very suspicious drills because all you need to do is change one little detail and they go live. They go from being a completely fictitious simulation to being exactly the catastrophe that they talk about.
Amazing. All true. So maybe we should keep our eye out if we get any advance notice of any new drills coming up of any sort.
I would urge people to do it and send them in and put up a special department on the website saying these are the drills you have to watch out for. Yeah. And the key thing is they shouldn't happen. Shut them down.
Happy to do it. Okay, hold on. Be right back. Back with Webster Tarpley. Did you folks know, and listen to some of these statistics, ever since Ronald Reagan left office, the United States has reduced its Navy. We used to have over 600 ships and submarines, now 288 and diminishing all the time. That's the smallest Navy the United States has had since William Howard Taft was president. Isn't that amazing?
I think that's very fundamental, that neocons depend on bluster and shock and awe and the aura of power. But in reality, they have that same hollow force. I mean, I always say 10 divisions, 10 hollow divisions with no logistics. The Navy that you've said, the Air Force cut down. This is not a strong state. It's a weak state. And
weaker,
the weak state.
And weak, getting weaker. Listen, there's a couple more real quickies here. Beyond that, our aircraft carrier fleet, it's truly on its way to the graveyard. I mean, three of the five in service were built 31 years ago.
Those are the ones for the Gulf.
There you go. Tarpley's Gulf. Consider, too, that the number of fighter aircraft America has now has dropped to less than 3,500, as we're expecting it to go down below 2,000 fighter aircraft ultimately. This country is being disarmed. No question.
I also think this is absolutely fundamental, because you said before the question of supporting the troops. Of course you support the troops. You want to bring them home. This is the point where flag rank officers, general officers, admirals, and people like this have got to say no. They've been led into one meat grinder by the neocons, and now they've got to say they're not going to go into a second neocon meat grinder. Back in that Philip Giraldi piece at the end of July, in the American Conservative, that talked about the new 9/11 and the danger of an attack on Iran, it also said the Air Force officers involved were horrified by what they were being asked to plan, because they were being asked to plan a sneak attack against the country with no demonstrable relation to whatever new 9/11 is going to be planned. But they felt that they had to save their careers. There was a moment in Vietnam where the entire Joint Chiefs of Staff were about 5 minutes away from all resigning. This is the time when responsible officers who are they are charged with the welfare of their men, their units, they cannot preside over the breaking of the U.S. Army and the U.S. Marine Corps. They must act lawfully, of course, but vociferously, publicly, to repudiate the discredited leadership of this administration. That was, of course, the question about General Burns. I just talked about sudden response 05. The command post of that whole exercise was Fort Monroe, Virginia, which was the Training and Doctrine Command, TRADOC. And back in early August, General Burns was fired by General Shoemaker. A Shoemaker being a special forces type who was at Desert One back in 1980, whatever it was, 1980, the abortive Carter attempt to free the hostages. And he's somebody who's been in Haiti, he's been in Panama. So Shoemaker would seem to be the utopian group, and Burns seemed to be somebody who was not happy with it. They told Burns that he should get ready for an army of illiterates, criminals, and people who couldn't speak English, and he said that was not going to be an effective army. So the neocons didn't like that, so he was dumped. So I think there is institutional resistance of various kinds.
There have been a lot of them dumped. This winnowing of the ranks has been going on, they say, for the last 10-15 years.
And of course, it's purely negative. Negative criteria. Maybe one last thing on 9/11. On the cover of my book, this 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA, I put a nuclear mushroom cloud. And people often ask me, why did you put that on the cover of a 9/11 book? Well, in the meantime, and in line with what we've just been discussing, this question about how you use an exercise or drill that closely mimics what you want to do to conduit your operation through the bureaucracy, and then very small changes can turn it from a drill into something real. I mean, the key one would be, for example, the New York gas dispersion drill. If you simply take the inert gas and replace it with potassium cyanide and begin spewing that out, then you've created a massacre. And similarly, instead of a hypothetical 10 kiloton bomb that doesn't go off, you put in a real 10 kiloton bomb that does, you've done something similar, and so on. So this is a good reason to say we've had enough of these drills. Ominously, there's one tomorrow in Milan and Rome. There are several thousand people in each of those cities dealing with bombs in the subway, bombs in the central city, hostages taken, shootings of all different kinds. So any time you have such an exercise, there's a possibility for the rogue network to reach in and make it their vehicle. On 9/11, in addition to all of the ones that the six exercises we've mentioned so far, there's a new one that has become known since I wrote my book, anyway, about a year ago. It's called Global Guardian. And Global Guardian is the 9/11 exercise going on that day that included Armageddon. In other words, it was a drill for an all-out thermonuclear exchange between the U.S. and most probably Russia, but maybe China, maybe others, an unknown list. And you can find this on, I guess it's on cooperativeresearch.org, Paul Thompson's website. And what he has there, I think is very, very interesting. He says that one of the, and this is a quote from a Pentagon magazine some years before, one of the features of Global Guardian was to include a rogue element, that is to say, a bad apple inside the nuclear command with access to a key command and control system. And there you can see the back door by which the rogue network could have broken into the normal nuclear chain of command and actually launched missiles, as I write in my book. I didn't know about Global Guardian, but I think that this part of my book, which has been controversial for some, I think is fully vindicated by the discovery of Global Guardian. So what it shows is you don't want to have all these terror drills going on. You don't want to have military drills going on in the way that we have them right now. But above all, you don't want to have terror exercises, FEMA drills, Homeland Security, and so forth that have these terrorist hypotheses or
exactly.
Simulations.
Well, the track record of these being used as templates, if you will, templates are certainly cover for other things is shocking, and we've got to take them all seriously.
Yeah, they're expensive.
Need to be watched. You know,
they're expensive. They pollute. It turned out that the gas that was being used in New York City was going to remain. Traces would remain, according to one account, for thousands of years. It was a gas also that would change the register of the human voice. In other words, it would either make you a high soprano or a very deep bass compared to what you were when you started. And they terrorized the population. We don't need to be terrorized by these insane figments of some neocon's LSD imagination.
Right.
Of how he thinks Bin Laden or somebody else is going to attack the United States. There's got to be a kind of a citizens' movement, and it seems to me this can appeal to just neighborhood activists, but also ecologists, people coming from all different political quarters could all unite around the idea we don't need to have these drills. And I would also urge people: these things are generally made public. If you see them in your local press. If you have the chance to go to one of the websites, be it NORAD, the Pentagon, the British Defense Ministry, NATO Intelligence, start monitoring these things. Start sending them in to places like the RENTS website and similar places. And let's get a good overview of what these coming drills are. Because if there's one thing we've learned, it's that these drills can be, maybe not guaranteed, but can be and could be the vehicles for what we don't want to see coming our way in the near future.
Oh, no. And, you know, there's still talk about impeaching Bush and all that. They don't talk about Cheney, the invisible man, much. And then we look at this Roberts thing. It is a picture of Roberts in USA Today, I guess, with that New World Order halo above his head. You know, that white light behind him, which makes a perfect halo. Just like they did with Bush a couple of times. These psyops are laughable. They're so transparent.
I would say if there is a Democratic Party, let them filibuster this guy. Let Bush and the Republicans try to implement their nuclear option in their current weakened state. I don't think they can do it. They're on the run. The Republicans are split down the middle between the ones who want to use the federal budget to enrich their cronies and the ones who want to parade themselves as fiscally responsible. Bush is reeling. Bush is in full retreat, and we can't even get the Democrats to vote against this oligarch. And of course, what we need is a filibuster to stop him, and then let's see if the Republicans really decide to.
You know, I agree. Back overseas for a minute, one more adventure, or a couple of adventures, Syria, Iran, and this military is going to be in a wheelchair. Ours. Did people forget the bombing of Yugoslavia? The Air Force went to the Pentagon or the JCS and said, we need at least 8 months to recover, retool, and re-equip from this bombing. 8 months. And that was just bombing Yugoslavia for, what is it, 50 days? It was a terrible thing. I forget. But the point is that it showed right then and there, and this is going back how many years?
1999.
That's right. And the Air Force had, at that time, a real problem maintaining a severe and persistent presence in an offensive capability.
But if you compare the bombing of Serbia to the bombing of Iraq in Desert Storm, you'll see that by the time you get to Serbia, the capabilities are cut by a third or a quarter. Just one last thing, of course, the North Koreans are kind of doing a Hitler-Stalin pact. They're basically saying, don't attack us. And I guess if I have very limited time, if people are coming to Washington for the demonstration on Saturday,
uh-huh.
We're going to have a meetup of 9/11 activists at the Einstein Memorial at 21st Street Northwest and Constitution Avenue. So the Einstein Memorial, 21st Northwest and Constitution, and our slogan is, don't nuke Iran for Cheney's new 9/11.
Good for you. Good. Good luck this weekend, Webster. Thanks for being here. It's always a pleasure. We'll talk again. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Webster Griffin Tarpley, quite a dissertation, a lot of fascinating material, and we'll pause and continue.